Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hi there. Welcome to The Good Place, the podcast.
I've really gotten into podcasts since we started this. Did you know the number one podcast in The Good Place is Mozart and Jimi Hendrix talking about music? And the number one podcast in The Bad Place is Joseph Stalin recapping The Bachelor.
Hope you enjoy this week's episode.
Welcome to The Good Place, the podcast. I'm Mark Evan Jackson. I play Sean. Today we're talking about Chapter 33, Season 3, Episode 6, A Fractured Inheritance, written by Cassia Miller, directed by Beth McCarthy Miller, and including guest cast Rebecca Hazelwood, Anna Kaja, Leslie Grossman, Ajay Mehta, Andrew Daly, Stella Edwards, Grace Ann Pulipali, Peter Katona, Yanelli Ireland, Janet Song, and Johnny Costry. After learning that her mother is alive, Eleanor travels to Nevada with Michael to help her get into the good place. At first, she investigates what must be Donna's latest scam, this time involving a hapless architect, Dave, and his daughter. When she realizes that her mother is actually happy living a suburban life and has changed, Eleanor convinces Donna to use her cash safety net to help her new daughter and be the mother she could never be for Eleanor. Meanwhile, in Budapest, Tahani apologizes to her sister Camilla for all the pain she's caused her. Her sister refuses to accept her apology until Tahani realizes that her parents played them against each other, fueling all of Camilla's art. Tahani makes Camilla hug her, and they bond over how terrible their parents were. Later, Michael confesses to Eleanor that she's not incapable of loving relationships, that she and Chidi were in love in the afterlife. My guests today are graphic designer Graham Ratliff, Andy Daly, who plays Dave, and Rebecca Hazelwood, who plays Camilla Al-Jamil. Rebecca, Andy, and Graham, welcome. Everything is going great.
Yes,
I mean,
terrific.
Perfect, right? Or, yeah. Just perfect. I mean,
just
flawless.
Wonderful.
I mean, it only took 90 minutes for you to read that, but they'll edit a lot of it.
Oh, boy.
I
had some accents I was going to try, and I think I'm going to pass at this point.
Accents?
Thank you so much for being here. This is a fun and weird assembly of people for this podcast, and I'm excited to talk to each of you. Graham, first things first, how long have you been with the show?
I came on this season.
Very cool. But you've worked in the Mike Shuraverse before.
Yes. Yeah. I was on Parks and Rec for pretty much the entire run. Came on in season 2 on that one. I was the art department coordinator on that one. But they didn't have a graphics person at first, so I kind of did both for a little while.
Okay. And what's the difference between the two?
The coordinator is a very important role, but it is kind of like the hub. And, you know, you're connected to clearances. You're connected to transpo.
That's right.
Everything.
We learned the word Greeking from Tom Zawacki. That's a clearance issue, right? Like,
yes.
You can't use Coca-Cola, or you could, but you'd have to pay, or they'd have to pay you or something. So
and
you
that
create
is a
one
big art department coordinator issue.
Yeah.
And so it actually helps inform me when it comes to graphic type stuff. Or like, I see something in the script and I'll know, oh, like, not to get ahead, but the box of soap.
Yeah.
You know, no company is going to want their laundry detergent having runaway money stuffed into it. So you kind of know, oh, we're going to need to come up with a fake graphic for that.
Sure, but that's legitimately confusing to me. Because if I were the owner, and hopefully one day I will be, of a laundry soap company, I mean, why wouldn't you? Like, it's not
free
drug
advertising,
money.
Right?
Right, free advertising.
Yeah.
Well, and then, okay, now we're really getting into the weeds on clearances. Oh, but you also
we,
have to
my
deal
friend,
with,
we have not begun the weeds.
With sales is an issue too. So oh, yeah. It might be that by featuring that one,
mm-hmm. You know, we may not know what companies yeah,
as a producer or whatever, you know, Morgan soap may not
wars.
Know. But,
soap wars.
But Tide may have been like, oh, we were going to buy right. advertising, but now you're showing this other thing. So
as long as we're in it, I feel like Seventh Generation is in evidence in that scene, isn't it?
It is, but it's not, it's just there.
Okay.
It's not, you know, it's not like it's a featured role. Although, honestly,
it.
When I saw it, it's pretty much there.
So what is the job of a graphic designer?
Okay, well, graphic designer, I suppose the easiest way to say it is signage. If you see a sign, that was the graphic designer. Book covers, magazine covers, logos, that sort of thing.
And do you do that for even things that VFX later has to put in? Like we've learned that sometimes the back of a magazine, it was a joke added later. So
yes.
Are you designing that and Neednoggle is Neednoggling it?
It depends on the situation. A lot of times if it's something that has been established, like say all of the museum stuff we did in the art department. But then when it came time to do an establishing shot, which I think when we were shooting, we didn't, you know, that's just probably stock footage of some exterior.
Mm-hmm.
Then post and visual effects will go and take that and make the big banner that hangs across the front in that establishing shot. So it's kind of like they will use stuff that we made and I give them all the digital assets so that they can then do whatever they need with it.
What programs, what apps are you using?
It's mostly Photoshop and Illustrator.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah. Although, you know, sometimes you'll do some stuff in SketchUp if it needs to be like a 3D model. But mostly it's Illustrator and Photoshop.
Very interesting.
Who did the paintings? Can I ask a question?
Yeah, of course you can ask a
Who
question.
Made the art paintings?
Okay, that was actually our paint department. I think they all had a hand in the shapes. If you're talking about the boob paintings.
The boobs.
Yeah, yes, the boobs.
They're all boobs.
You know, in this case with the museum, the script was pretty specific about what they wanted mm-hmm. everything to look like.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I think Ian would work on sketches that would work later on in the cross dissolve. And then once that was kind of locked down, our paint department went crazy painting these giant paintings. And then the eggs, which were also in the script, that was more of a process on my end, tweaking it so that all of these photos of eggs looked like the same person took the photo
mm-hmm.
and then, you know, getting those printed up big.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of the person that took the photo, Rebecca Hazelwood,
hello.
How many episodes of The Good Place has Camilla appeared in? Is it four or five at this point?
I think this is the fourth. Yes.
And what I find fascinating about that is that your character has not been there tons and tons, and yet I have very strong feelings about Camilla. Like, she elicits, you know, like...
strong reactions.
Doom and gloom, and I find myself up until this episode, you know, having a, I don't know, hatred. like, she's such a powerful character. What was in the breakdown? What when you were offered this role or read for this role, were you told that who Camilla is?
I mean, very little, actually.
Really?
I just got the scene.
Okay.
Because I'd actually auditioned for a different part. I'd actually auditioned for the role of, oh my God, I can't remember. Vicky?
Yes.
Vicky. So,
oh, that's then, fascinating.
Apparently, Mike wanted me to come in, and he kind of had this idea of, you know, another Tahani. He must have been like a Indian girl, British accent.
Sure.
There's two of them. Put them together. So, yeah, I knew it was the character of a sister. I knew she was like this huge kind of international pop star. And the FKA Twigs was kind of the sort of...
What's that?
FKA Twigs, the artist, the she's a singer.
I'm not familiar.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm 80.
Oh, mm-hmm. That must be why.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she dates Robert Pattinson, and she's like this huge kind of sort of theatrical kind of performance artist pop star.
Okay.
With all these crazy makeup and crazy hair and stuff. So that was kind of the design aspect of Camilla.
Was that in the script, or was that something that you and the writers just saw?
I think I sort of turned up on the day and they were like, oh, that was it. I had to do a whole like dress rehearsal.
Is that right?
Well, they designed the character. So because I came in like just for a day, just for like hair, makeup and costume.
You know, that never happens with me.
Really?
Yeah, that almost never happens with the characters I play. They're like gray suit, blue suit. Okay, cool. Because
so that was exciting.
Camilla does have always interesting things. At one point, I feel like you had maybe like... face henna or something, or some sort of...
I did. I had face tattoos. I had like green lipstick.
That's right.
I had like a whole bunch of... I had like a Lenny Kravitz look at one point with like dreads, like long black dreads. Yeah. I mean, it's quite a thing. I have to come in really early in the morning to get all that stuff on.
Me too. At least half an hour before. Andy Daly
takes 2 hours.
Is that right?
Yeah, it can.
Good.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a whole thing.
It's a whole thing.
It's a whole thing.
Think about FKA Twigs. She does it every day.
I can't. I don't know who that is.
Me neither. And I'm really like up on stuff. This podcast don't feel bad.
Had to teach me what the words dank memes meant from several episodes ago. Andy, people know you from everything. You've also been part of the Mike Shore world. I feel like you've been on Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Was I on Brooklyn? Yeah, I was. Yeah.
And I feel like something that I remember distinctly was your portrayal of on The Office of Benjamin Franklin.
Oh, yeah. That was a good one. People talk to me about that all the time.
It's memorable.
Yeah.
And I feel like it must be popular because it's in heavy rotation on Comedy Central. Like,
oh, yeah.
in the reruns and the syndication of it all.
Yeah, that was a fun one. I enjoyed that. That was I auditioned for that and was very happy. That character is in like a scenes with all of the other characters in that show. You know what I mean?
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. You sort of touch all of the different scenes, don't you?
Yeah.
Were you on Parks and Recreation as well?
No.
Seems impossible.
Well, I had an offer to do something on Parks and Recreation and I was in the middle of making Review at that time and it burned me up. I wanted to do it.
Yeah.
And I don't talk to the guy that ended up doing it anymore. I don't talk to that guy.
Okay.
Because that was my part.
Okay.
No, I'm okay.
It's not me, is it? All right.
No, I'm okay.
We are not dissimilar types, so I think.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, there's been some of those. Yeah, I think I read for the principal in Jumanji, so, ticked off with you for that.
Oh, boy. let's talk a little bit about this episode, about the episode titled A Fractured Inheritance.
Yeah.
We find ourselves in Tarantula Springs, Nevada.
Tarantula Springs.
I feel like Mike and the writers... disdain for Florida and Arizona is getting more specific and spiraling out. Especially, was it that your character Dave had designs on a thing, the desert rash?
Yeah, right. Yeah, he was tearing down a bar called the Desert Rash, and he's making a Hooters now. It's not classy. It's not a classy world in Tarantula Springs, Nevada. Is it Nevada?
I think it is. Yeah.
Is it a real place or was it?
It can't be.
Okay. I'm just checking.
No, I feel like that's another clearance.
I'm not from here, so,
no town founders would want to.
I don't know.
You wouldn't want to evoke the image of a spring full of tarantulas, I don't think, intentionally, not on purpose.
In yet another example of these writers just being straight mercenary sniper killers. Eleanor is remembering that her mother, Donna, that a cop came to the door and shared the story about how she was accidentally trampled when she bent down to adjust her toe ring at a Rascal Flatts concert, which is about as densely packed a nugget of Arizona as we can get. And what I found hilarious about it, too, is that that made perfect sense to Eleanor. Like, that was like, oh, of course. I mean, that could happen to any of us.
Yeah. You know, The toe ring can get uncomfortable if it's not adjusted just right.
And then in a callback to the episode that took place in the Museum of Low-Grade Human Suffering, we find out that Donna has pooched Eleanor's fake ID, and is using Diana Tremaine, which is pretty funny to me. The overarching element, the sort of thematic part of this, where we are, I guess, in the season, but in this episode as well, is that they're trying to help people. These people find themselves in a position where they know for sure they'll never get into the good place. Mm-hmm. And so all they can do is go about and help others. And I love at the end of the cold open, like Eleanor's kind of mad about it. And Michael talks her down and he's like, look, we're here to help and we got to do it. She's like, okay. And then we cut to the door and she's like, how could you do this to me? Like, she's still super impetuous or whatever. I legitimately try to stay clear of the scripts. Scripts that, as you know, that you're not in, you don't get sent. Mm-hmm. I do get them now because I'm hosting this podcast, but I deliberately don't read them or look at casting or anything to try to maintain my distance and and my fandom of the show and be able to enjoy it as a fan. And when you came on, Andy, the note I have here is legitimately, oh,
shirt.
Andy Daly.
Oh, you didn't know I was going to be there.
I had no idea.
Oh, that's funny.
What did the breakdown of your guys say? Who did they say that Dave was?
God, oh, I don't remember. So I was offered it. And yeah, there would have been a little breakdown in the offer, but it didn't matter to me because it was like The Good Place. Yes. The answer is yes.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah. I mean, like, I don't care.
Just, we've heard that answer on this show before.
Uh-huh. Yeah. 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 Actually, funny enough, the way it came about is that I had auditioned for a different project that Mike Schur was working on. And I know, like, I gave a good audition. It was not quite right for the part. It was like not a hard feeling situation, but in the kind of let me down phone call that Dave Minor made to me, Dave Minor, producer on
the
show.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
He said, you know, yeah, it's not going to work out for this, but Mike says he has something fun for you on The Good Place, which if that always happened,
oh my God,
anytime you didn't get something, they were like, but here also is a really great part on one of the best shows on television. The show business would be a lot easier.
It would be a lot easier.
It would be wonderful.
It would be wonderful.
If there were like a make good consolation prize
so
of like, that's been my, for the record, entire career, is that it's like, you didn't get this thing, but they're going to give you something juicy that will recur a little bit here and there and then turn into something like,
it's not
I'd
bad.
Accept that
yeah,
all day.
That's kind of show what business? Happened to me.
Is it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Showbiz consolation prize.
Oh, yeah, interesting. Right. So when, that makes me think. So when you began as Camilla, like, did they say like, we'll probably see you again? Like there was no.
Yeah, there was kind of like
promise
an indicator. There's no promise. It was kind of an indication that she was going to recur.
That's really cool. Mike has a, we've learned on this podcast, has a file for actors called, it's not a great name. It's Good for Something, which seems like paint price.
Good for Something.
Like, I made the folder.
The heart behind it is a great notion, which is like, they weren't quite right for what we were looking for here, but they're great.
Yeah. Like, I don't know what for yet.
Yeah.
But yeah,
I don't know what for yet.
It's
good
not
for
meant
something.
To be.
That's nice.
I mean, it's better than good for nothing. But,
absolutely.
But entitled.
I wonder if he does have a good for nothing folder
as
well.
For nothing folder,
I think it's called the garbage.
That gets like shredded.
One element that we see run in this show, in this episode, that's fun too, is Eleanor's inability to connect with this little girl. Like she's instantly threatened by her, but she's like, who the hell is this chick? Like this is a tiny little girl, all the way not a chick, which is really very fun. We find ourselves in Budapest. We're at a gallery. I'm pretty sure the temp shot, at least, was the Supreme Court building. Did you have a hand in that?
I did not.
Okay.
But no, I was thinking, where is that? Because it didn't... Some of the other stuff...
I think that's
the
facade of the U.S. Supreme Court.
Right, yeah. Well, it's the Budapest National Museum, I guess.
I guess so.
Same architect. He didn't think he'd ever get caught. They're so far away.
We are being led through the gallery by noted art connoisseur Jason Mendoza, who sees boobs and everything, and isn't super wrong. And as a performance art piece, Camilla is working at a what? Like a...
I'm making omelets.
You're so popular, your character is so popular and beloved that she could do literally anything.
Yes, I can. It's totally serious omelet performance art piece. It's a commentary on, I've forgotten what the list was.
it exists, right? Like it's spoken or on the walls. And,
yes, in her mind, it absolutely exists. Yeah. So she's basically serving omelets to all these fashionistas.
Now, what is your, Rebecca's, history in food service?
I actually do have my basic food and hygiene certificate.
Is that true?
Yes.
Is that a thing that, is that like a driver's license to us? What does that mean?
Basic food and hygiene
basic
certificate?
Basic food and hygiene certificate, yeah.
Who gave that to you?
When I was working in my school holidays, when I was waitressing at Debenhams restaurant at the Merrihill Shopping Centre.
Where's that?
It's in the Black Country, in the West Midlands, where I'm from.
Okay.
In England. And I actually had to serve eggs.
Is that right?
Yeah. Mm. So I had to do like some cooking and then, but I wasn't very good. So they used to like send me out to like kind of greet the customers and like wipe tables and stuff.
Oh, okay.
Very glamorous.
Very glamorous.
Very glamorous.
Now, in the course of shooting that scene, did you actually, were the hot plates practical? Did you make any omelets?
There was a heated hot plate. I didn't actually make an omelet. It was a pre-made omelet.
Okay.
Which wouldn't have been very passable for basic food and hygiene, actually.
Is that right? Yeah. Temperatures and times and that sort of thing.
Yes. Very bad. Very bad.
Mm-hmm. Graham, we see some of your handiwork here. I would guess that some of the signage on the walls.
Yes.
And yeah. What is that? Is that like printed latex or acrylic?
Yeah, it's a cut vinyl that we apply just straight to the wall, kind of like you would see at LACMA or any other museum. We shot it, I think, in an empty warehouse in North Hollywood. So those walls had to be built.
Wow.
And then we had to cover a lot of them. So, but it was fun to do and to base all of the text kind of off of some of her dialogue and then just kind of build off of that as best we could.
I want to ask you about that because that's something that we hear a lot from the art department, things that are not, you know, scripted Easter eggs or that sort of thing, but there's a lot of density of jokes that come from your department. Do you have a background in comedy?
Not at all. No.
Okay.
No, it's just trying to be goofy and there's enough people that it has to go through, but by the time it gets to the top, they're kind of like, oh yeah, okay, this is goofy enough that it works.
But sometimes they rope you in and like they're like, that sucks. That's super cornball.
Oh, it's definitely come back and been like, this does not work at all. And you're like, oh, okay, I'm sorry, I apologize.
Yeah.
Every show's different. This show you can get away with a whole lot more because ultimately, if it makes anybody sort of chuckle, they're like, yeah, okay, let's go with that. Unless it doesn't work tonally. We've had stuff come back where they said, that's too mean for this character or this doesn't fit with, I'm trying not to get ahead of the season, but there are certain things that won't fit with that type of character or arc.
Sure. Now, do you, in a practical sense, do you have cut vinyl printers or do you send that to somebody?
We send those to the sign shop, although they are getting cheaper and smaller. So it would not surprise me. Just in the time I've been doing this, there's a lot more printing in the sign or in the art department than there used to be because printers are getting cheaper and it's easier to just have some of the stuff, certainly for props where it's small, on your desk and you can just cut the vinyl easy.
I have a question.
Yes.
Actually, do you still have my statue, my gold statue, my 3D printed?
Somebody has that? We have
what
the
are they
files.
Doing with it?
That's a great question.
I'm sure it's locked up in a warehouse like the Ark of the Covenant or something like that. But yes, I believe that file, if they wanted to print more, they could.
Good Lord.
I mean, was that enormous?
It was pretty big.
It's
was
the
like
thing
an
that
8-foot
kills Tahani, right?
Gold statue that they like made of me and spray painted. And I didn't really understand the concept when they were explaining it to me.
Yeah.
And then I turned up on the set and there was this huge statue of me.
If you had it, what would you do with it?
I'd put it in the garden.
You would?
Yeah. I have a pool. I'd have it at the end of the pool.
You could probably talk to somebody about them printing another one.
You
there
think
you go.
My agent was saying that he might have it for the office?
Yeah.
He'd like hang his coat on it and stuff.
Are you kidding? Given the opportunity? 100%. I would do that all day long.
I know, right?
You mentioned that you didn't really understand the full concept of the show. This is a show where that happens a lot. But it was weirder even in your episode where the statue falls when you shot that.
Mm-hmm.
Because we learned from Jamila not long ago that long in advance, a season in advance of it happening, Ted Danson was on set there dressed as Karl Lagerfeld to come and rescue her and pull her out.
Yes.
And that's plot point that wouldn't materialize for, I don't know, 15 episodes later or something, like a crazy amount of time later.
I remember him. I remember his ponytail.
Yeah.
his striking ponytail. they sort of came up to me. Well, Morgan Sackett came up to me and said, do you mind if we shoot like this, you know, alternative ending? Like we might use it, we might not. And I'm like, sure. Like, obviously, like Ted's in it. It's amazing. So we shot it having no kind of, you know, idea of how it was going to materialize.
It's amazing.
There we go.
Camilla is once again such in that scene such a perfect foil because
she's such a twat.
Tahani goes like, "Who saved me? Did anybody see?" And they're like, "I think it was Camilla." And
like,
"No, it was
Camilla.
A man. I'm sure it was a man." And then they start chanting Camilla,
yes,
which is just delightful.
Of course.
A super parenthetical thing that happens very quickly that I love is that these two Hungarian dudes are there, kind of a, you know, flies on the wall, popping in at every time, commenting on things.
They're like a reverse Waldorf and Stadler. They love everything.
That was a reference that it felt like. I love that, like, of course, Chidi speaks their language.
Oh, right.
Like, of course, Chidi's able to, like, answer them, like, sisters.
And he, like, can't resist.
Oh, can't resist.
He just can't keep it in.
Can't be done. Let's listen to a clip.
Oh.
Hey, now. I just checked my Apple Watch, and it's Margo Clock. So, Michael, what do you do?
Ah, well, I'm an architect.
Get out of here.
Me too.
Huh. Dave's real good. You should see the new Hooters on I-15. It looks classy, like a bank.
So how did you two love rats meet?
Oh, it's a fun story. I was working on this project tearing down a condemned bar called the Desert Rash. I went in to meet with the contractors, and Diana is sitting at the bar drinking a 7 and 7 and 7.
7 shots of Seagram's 7 in 7 minutes. It's Diana's morning drink.
Oh, that's right. It was very early in the morning. Well, this little spitfire finds out it's me who's closing down the bar. Next thing I know, she's got a knife to my face. I would have been scared if she hadn't been the most gorgeous thing I've ever seen in my life.
No. One thing leads to another, and all of a sudden, we're playing tonsil tennis on a broken toilet in the alley out back.
Cute.
So how did you and Eleanor become friends?
Well, let's just say that we lived in the same neighborhood.
Oh, what a fun way to say a normal thing, right?
You can find full episodes of The Good Place on NBC.com and the NBC app. What a fun way to say a normal thing.
Yeah. That's a great one.
Was that scripted?
That was scripted, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Was there any play in that scene?
Maybe a little bit on that was very early in the morning. I mean, I think that line was scripted, but I may have goofed around at the top or bottom or something like that.
It's funny when you're thinking of clearances and things that you say Apple Watch, because that's such a specific thing, must be in the writer's room, that they're like, oh, this character
this
would wear
an Apple Watch.
And even without Apple paying us, we're going to mention it because it's such a strong thing. Something that cracked me up in the rewatching of that scene, probably the third or fourth time that I watched it, was like, they're having this terrible conversation about their terrible lives and, stranger sex out back, basically, and the little girls in the distance entire time.
I know. And Beth McCarthy Miller, who directed this episode, I remember she kept giving the note, like, you guys should kind of whisper because she's over your shoulder or whatever. And I tried to remember it, but I'm not sure that we as a group were necessarily keeping our voices down appropriately for a child doing homework in the room.
No, it's a very shelf drop thing, I think, to be like, she can't hear.
She'll be all right.
She'll be fine. Jason gives Janet a brief tour, and it's fun. It's another character thing that Darcy pulls off so well. You can feel her being Janet, and she's, just being sort of the face of it. But she loves him so much, and he has no idea. he in this iteration of their existence, he doesn't know that she has these feelings for him. And he's just being effortlessly charming. Tani tries to apologize to Camilla. Camilla's not having it.
No, she really isn't.
Yeah, what's her deal?
She's such a dick. I don't know. I don't know what her problem is.
it's a fun turn that you do there, because you very graciously say thank you.
And I
then
do. Go,
and then say, I don't accept your apology, and walk off. Was that indicated? What did the script say in that instant?
It didn't really say that much. It was kind of filmed as written. But yes, I guess because with the sort of long-term aspect of Camilla needing that tension between her and her sister to fuel her creativity and fuel her art, because she needs she needs some sort of substance behind her performance.
Her being hatred,
kind of stoking a hatred with her sister and this competitive nature and that they have. It kind of worked. It was working for Camilla.
It does work. Mm-hmm. And I think, don't we have another example here of who saved me? It was a man, I'm sure. No, it was Camilla. Tahani throws an egg and you get credit for brand new art or something?
For creating something.
An egg on an egg.
And the social commentary of that. And
it's very funny and weird.
Obviously, it's incredibly socially important.
The writers take another crack at Nevada. There's a Subaru dealership / burlesque club in Reno.
Oh, right.
Were there alts on that stuff? Sometimes they put in, more specific terrible things.
I don't remember. The only thing that I remember having a lot of alts on, it might be my last line where I hold up my Apple Watch, which has a studded band. And I say, who am I, Avril Lavigne? which I thought was great. And then there were a bunch of alts on that of other lame people that I could be. But you couldn't beat Avril Lavigne. I know I was, who am I, Phil Collins? But couldn't beat Avril Lavigne.
I love Phil Collins.
I know, me too.
I would guess relatives of Avril Lavigne are big fans of Avril Lavigne. Eleanor is a terrible and great character. I love how she conflates characters and actors. She says, makes a reference to Kaiser Sose, and then
said something about before he got in trouble for all the groping or something.
Which is so like under the radar.
It's a really line. Swallowed, yeah, thrown away bit. And it's pretty great. And here we have another example of her not being able to tell ages or relate to a young girl. She does to a 9-year-old. Oh, hey, girl. Oh, hey, girl. I learned that Doc McStuffins is a real thing.
Oh, you don't know about Doc McStuffins?
No, do you?
Oh, sure, I do.
Do you have a child?
I have children who are heavily into Doc.
It's a Disney show, apparently.
Mm-hmm. She's a child who does surgery on her animals. Not really surgery. She doesn't get out the scalpels all that often. But, you know, it's Band-Aids.
My God, it sounds horrific.
She's a stuffed animal doctor. No, but like, it's not as
kiss
not
the boo-boo grisly. Kind of stuff.
That
it's
kind
not,
of stuff. Yeah.
We're not doing bowel resections.
Not usually.
Good Lord.
Not usually. It's not as much blood as it sounds like.
Only for sweeps, I think, probably.
Wouldn't want to go to that teddy bear's picnic.
No.
There's a fun through line in this episode, too, of like Michael sort of, you know, being very human. It was odd to see Ted driving a car as Michael. Like, where did they get or rent a car? There are a lot of unanswered questions in this show. He's asked if he has a penis. And Eleanor is like, she's driving. She wants him to hit on Donna, right? To hit on Diana Tremaine. He won't answer the question. He just moves on from it. Mm. Later we get that with bathrooms and stuff.
He doesn't go to the bathroom.
He doesn't go to the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
We got to figure out what's going on down there. Graham, this isn't a graphics thing necessarily, but there's an orange dog in the backyard of the, like a toy. I looked it up. It's a sculpture by Eero Aarnio, a Finnish interior designer. But it's so specific. Do you have any memory of what I'm talking about?
I don't.
Okay.
But we have a fantastic set decorator, Kim, so it wouldn't surprise me if all that stuff is on purpose.
I think it's just a natural factor of this show that there's so much depth and density that I find myself looking for the code on the back of the Declaration of Independence, you know, like the treasure map for stuff. There's a green bottle later in Donna's kitchen that's on the counter that is really prominent. And maybe if you touch it, you go to heaven. I don't know what happens. Chidi offers to talk to Camilla, and it's a power, like it's a thoughtful move on his part, and he's going to take control or whatever. He's immediately disarmed. When you know that his name is an Igbo word meaning God exists. And I think that, like, this is a show famous for burning through story and plot and giving away its secrets early, doing things earlier than expected. And I found it fascinating that, like, we've been 30-some episodes into this show and never discussed what his name means.
Mm-hmm.
And his name is super seminal to the premise of this
show. Well, is that true? Is that an actual fact?
It is. I looked it up. Igbo is a language of southern Nigeria. And it's imperfect in Google Translate, but yeah, it looks as though it means God exists. Also, these writers don't mess around.
No, they don't. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
I know.
I love the line. Typical. All of your fears are mine now.
All of your fears.
What a lovely gesture.
I love the sort of. It's both aggressive and very gingerly that you snap up his fears. What did it say in the script there? Was that you? Was that directed at anything?
No, that was scripted. That was, I'm trying to think of what the stage direction was. It was like this kind of movement with her hand where she sort of grasps his fears from the atmosphere, from his aura.
Mm.
And takes them and clutches them to her chest.
It's your portrayal of it is really powerful, and you seem otherworldly. I'm thinking of too when Tani first comes up to the table.
That's what I was going for.
You did it. You at one point turn to the customer, the omelet customer, just ahead of Tahani, and say, just as a butterfly, I don't know what it was.
As a frog stares in awe at the treetops, so too does humanity gawk at the. Something.
Oh, that was really great.
Yeah.
That was really
it.
Yeah. But that was
the purity of a blinding truth. That's it. Mm. That's the line.
Why is that in your head still?
Because I had to say it so many times.
Okay. Oh,
and because I kind of thought it was quite beautiful. And I was just like, I have no understanding of why they're making me say this, but it's great.
It's really great.
I love it.
But that's, you know, that really brings Camilla home because you're like, oh, she's a sorcerer. Like, you know, she's a person that could look through you, and you're like, I went to go yell at her, and I think I want to be her friend now. You know, like it's that kind of thing that happens to Chidi.
Yeah, she has this kind of ethereal I wanted this ethereal kind of quality to it, which is kind of what FKA Twigs does have.
I'm sorry, who's that?
You've already forgotten. That's a different problem.
Yeah, I wanted to kind of capture that sort of whimsical, sort of, you know, very, very kind of superstar, kind of beyond this world kind of.
Yeah, but not full of it. It's kind of like she's pulling it off. It's a real deal.
Yeah, there's like some kind of spirituality there, but then sort of, but then is it real spirituality, you know?
Yeah.
Or is it manufactured spirituality?
Right, there's a charlatan element of it.
And definitely, there's a trickster kind of aspect.
Which I think exists a lot with mediums and fortune tellers and things. It's like, oh, this is stupid. And you're like, wow, they got close on that.
Though. Yeah,
so
right.
So what does that mean?
Right.
Jamil refers to herself often as Bambi on ice. So it was both like powerful and super scary to see her wield an axe.
I know, right? I stood back.
Oh, sure. Smartly. At first I thought that axe might be inadvertent art, that was like art on the wall that she's grabbing and was going to get, in trouble with security for that. But yeah, to see Jamila brandish that axe was...
I mean, I think it was a rubber axe.
I don't understand what you're saying. Hollywood is fake.
How did it get launched into the table?
It was a fake axe.
They can do anything.
They can.
A man came up and lodged it in there after.
Oh. Somebody different?
Yes.
Of course, yeah.
They were like, don't let Jamila hold the axe, whatever you do.
Are you kidding? I bet you're not kidding.
No, I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
No, she should not hold that axe. The stories she's told on this podcast alone would lead anybody to know that you should not put a practical fire axe in the hands of my very dear friend who I adore, Jamil.
I've been hit with a rubber nightstick.
Okay.
And it really hurt. It was like a prop rubber nightstick.
Sure, still.
Yeah, you know, so anyway.
I love the Michael and Dave are bonding in their like co-dorkiness. Auditorium.
Yeah, they really hit it off.
Oh, I mean, they really.
Two architects.
Michael's
really
got a friend. Unrelated.
Each other's language.
Unrelated to the subject of this television show and the four humans that he's trying to shepherd through this life. He's like, he's got a buddy now.
Yes. Yeah. Those were fun scenes to play.
Eleanor is experiencing mixed feelings. You know, you see her sort of enjoying that her mother is happy in the suburban life. And yet she doesn't quite believe it. She thinks that she's up to something, that she's got a scam going on. And finally she breaks and gets very emotional and says, I don't want her to have this because why couldn't she have been that mom to me? And it's another example of this show being the smartest, dumbest show. Like there's so many throwaway jokes that are just mean and funny. And then there's this giant heart that goes on, you know, at the...
I know, I love that speech. It's pretty cool. That it's a great self-analysis for the character to realize, like, the reason I can't believe that my mother is happy is nice to this girl. It means she could have been nice to me. It's like a big...
And didn't.
Yeah, and didn't. Didn't feel like it. I wasn't worth it. Right.
Hurt.
That's really sweet.
Yeah.
And I think also in a weird way, she would almost rather that her mother was still the same horrible person instead of getting better.
Mm.
It's like
for
we don't want people to be able to improve themselves, even though that's her mission, ostensibly. Mm-hmm. She would have been happier if her mom was just still the trash bag.
Yeah. Irredeemable. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. She says early on in this episode, sun-baked Arizona trash or something. Right. Something like that.
Oh. My God. Harsh.
It's harsh. And it's correct. it seems, you know, Donna wins the election. She becomes the secretary, I think, of the PTA. And we find out that she got the majority of the votes. Somebody got this, somebody got this. And there was one vote for Bofa D's Nuts, which even Michael, who's not from this planet, knows was Eleanor. It's pretty great. So, Graham, we talked a little bit about the seventh generation laundry detergent. What was the name of the one where Eleanor finds the...
Clean.
Clean.
Yes, but it was the phonetic
two
spelling.
E's.
Yeah. K-L-E-N.
And so is that your job to come up with something like... Clean wasn't in the script.
Right, no.
It just says she's got a laundry box problem.
Normally, it'll first go to the writers, and if the writers want to come up with a name for it, that's what we would defer to and hope that they would, because we're not going to beat them. In some cases, though, they're busy with coming up with a million other names. Like in this one, they were naming every single piece of artwork. So each...
Is that true?
It is true. Each one has a name that Mike or the writer's room came up with.
Wait, in that whole gallery, you have the statement, the like the title of it, the year, the materials, yes, the
every
artist.
Every single one has a little tag.
Every single one?
Yeah.
Because that could just be Ipsum Laurel.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, it's never going to be seen. But it's fun for all the extras walking around to be like, oh, look at this. And of course, everyone was an egg pun. I wish I could remember one of them now, but every single one of them was an egg pun.
Now, where did those come from? Is that Megan?
Probably.
There's so much extra work on this show that goes in for no reason. That no, like, why would you do that?
Right, yeah.
I remember there was a whole thing. There was like a whole, there was sort of like a picture of me in like the shape of an egg with this sort of writing and the history, like my personal history, or like in this kind of egg-shaped writing. And I wish I'd taken a picture of it. I'm not sure it was even featured in the show.
You could see it briefly in the background.
Okay.
But you're mimicking, you get the note saying we're going to be in a fancy modern art gallery in Budapest. What do you Google image search first?
The actual the National Museum of Budapest.
Really?
Yeah. And then we'll look at that, Ian and Adam, the art director, and I will look and say, okay, we like this, don't like this. And then it's kind of building out from there. It's interesting because in the first two seasons, the previous graphic designer, Evan, who's fantastic, kind of really nailed down the look of The Good Place, where every
sign... The neighborhood.
Yeah, the neighborhood. Every sign is kind of feels like an extension of Michael and Janet, and it's just, they don't, it's not just that they feel larger than life, they don't feel real in a weird way.
Right.
And I think the Earth stuff, this go round, the goal is to, it still needs to be super heightened because it's this show.
Right.
But to try to have it feel a little bit more real. So in the museum, it was trying to find the balance between looking like the real museum and also being over the top where we could.
It just occurred to me too that you produced the menus at the Cowboy,
yes,
what have you, buffet, right?
Yeah, the Cowboy skyscraper. Yeah, that was a blast. That's actually where I first came on.
Okay,
on
and that's enormously dense with jokes and,
There are jokes everywhere. It's like every, you know, and Adam, the art director, was good at that too. When he was on set as they were dressing it, he would say, you know, we're missing a joke here, and he would kind of like call back in the office and like, we have this much space, see what you can come up with.
Wow.
Or, you know, he would see what Kim had brought in and they were like, well, we should have a funny sign here. And so it would be, you know.
There could be hours and hours of more television just looking around what the background actors get to see that the television audience doesn't.
That menu was a ton of fun, building off of what the writers, because some of those items were called out in the script. So we knew we had that, and then it was just kind of building off of that.
That gives you the tone of what they're after, and then you start to put together other disgusting American concoctions of foods.
And every
that
time I think, oh, I'm going too far, I would show it to somebody else, and like, oh, no, that's perfect. And like, well, okay, well, here we go.
So each of these pieces of artwork has a name. One is named A Precipitous Fanfare, Slow Abiding Number 12, The Crush of Age, After Wim Wenders, The Imaginarium of Dr. J., Cave, Heart, Blasphemy, Elephant, Every Soul a Horror, Turncoats in the Spring, Nowhere, Nothing, Everywhere, Menstruation, The Window to the Fall, The Hegemon's Shibboleth, The Ruby of Ararat, The Frog, The Bass, The Chimp, Panama.
And then, of course, we had to translate all of those into Hungarian as well.
Is that true?
That is true.
So you throw that stuff into a Google Translate?
Google machine and hope that it's right. Yep.
Oh, my goodness.
Fantastic.
And all that stuff exists somewhere, too. I mean, in addition to the 9-foot Camilla statue, like, that stuff's in a...
That stuff they may toss.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, it's just printed on a relatively thin cardstock. I don't know, maybe they save
everything.
I want
my egg poster and my statue.
Yeah.
Those you may be able to get.
Okay,
those may exist, yeah. You should ask, like, Morgan Sackett, because...
I think I will.
Yeah, I would.
Have it in the garden, although the birds might shirt on it, and that would upset me.
I guess put a roof over it? I don't know. Pretty soon it becomes a little shrine, doesn't it?
Yeah. An altar to myself might be going too far.
How's your neighbor? She's unusual. She's unusual. Watch new episodes of The Good Place on NBC. Thursdays, 8:30, 7:30 Central. Let's listen to another clip.
These paintings, they're us.
You're the boobs? Sorry, once Jason said it, that's all I can see.
What? Tawny, what are you doing? Stop it.
No, I'm going to hug you because I love you. Because you feel just as alone as I do. I'm sorry our parents were such wankers. And I understand that you can't accept my apology because that would quench your creative thirst. They forced us to compete. And that competition has fueled your art for decades. It's so awful, and I'm so sorry.
They were wankers, weren't they?
Oh, the absolute biggest wankers on earth.
Let them go, please.
We were so excited that we got to say wankers.
Is that right?
In that scene. And Miller was like, I get to say wanker. And I was like, me too.
Because it's out of character, or it wouldn't happen on British television, or how do you mean?
Because we thought we'd never be able to say it on American TV.
Is that right?
Yeah.
This show gets away with stuff.
It does.
I don't know how.
Yeah.
Simone called Eleanor a bit of a dick in an episode a week or two ago.
That might be a thing where like standards is like, well, don't make a habit of it, but this time, okay.
Maybe.
You know? Just the
sometimes
ones.
They do.
Like, this one, it feels like you went for it because wanker gets said, I don't know, six times.
Yeah, it was a back and forth. Yeah.
That scene, that flashback scene to your childhood is so great.
It's really
great. The
way
that that ends is remarkable.
The
moment right
cute.
Before the scene. Man.
Yeah.
It's really lovely. And the way that it's framed with the parents' heads and your two working at the easels and then that match cuts to the artwork is really pretty, right?
Very clever.
Cool move.
It's a very touching scene. You guys, it's really lovely to see these two people who I think in the course of this show there've been no two characters further apart as long as we've known them. And to watch you, Rebecca, and Jamila come together, it's really touching. It's just lovely. And then to realize that like she's been in handcuffs this whole time, handcuffs that you had her put in, is really funny.
And then she apparently controls the police in Budapest. Yes. Let them go.
I mean, that's how big.
I mean, she's just awful.
Yeah. It's really fun. And, It's a physical closeness that we haven't seen the character of Tahani be before. And I don't, you know, Camilla's been so chilly to this point that it really stands out as something new and unusual in that regard as well. Eleanor, of course, finds that her mother does have this escape cache if she should need it. But then in talking further, they realize that Donna is kind of at home. She actually does yoga. She drinks less. Like she's becoming kind of this actual yoga pants mom and kind of digs it and is into it. And maybe Eleanor has been successful. She's helped her mom or at least witnessed her become a better person and a person that she wants to be. She does still have the back door of cash in her bra, just in case, I guess. But she's helping her break the chain of Shellstrop mother-daughter crappiness. And that's another brand, I suppose, of a fractured inheritance, right? Like that's a different use of that title in this B story of this episode. We find out that not only is Camilla merciful enough to let her sister and her friend out of handcuffs, but you also sort of shared credit on the next exhibit, right?
On my art piece,
art piece.
Yes, my art has evolved through my new relationship with my sister. And I credit her for the first time ever.
I love that there's still competition in Tahani's blood, though, and she thinks that you should have renamed it Buried Hatchet. I should text her and let her know. And she's like, or don't.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know
Maybe
why we're
not.
Here, right? Things are good. Things are good. Maybe don't mess it up. Were there actual Budapest, this isn't graphics specifically, but it's art. It felt like we were driving through Budapest exteriors.
That was some excellent
Was that knee-boggling?
Yeah. Yeah, I caught the same thing. I was like, wow, it actually feels like they're there.
So that was shot in front of a green screen?
It was just a green screen, yeah.
I don't know if it's early in this episode or late. Michael and Eleanor are in the car, and they go over a speed bump, and you see it, and sound added, like a ka-dunk, and it's weird. Like, that's not real. They're not really driving, I don't think.
Right. No, it's that extra attention to detail. Speed bump.
I mean, that's weird. Don't you? I think. I don't know. So Eleanor's going to out her mother and tell Dave that Diana Tremaine is fake, and she in fact does. Dave's not surprised.
Nope. Dave knew all along. And actually, when we were shooting that scene where she, you know, spills the beans about her mom to Dave and he says, I already knew all that. It was a moment for me. I had read the whole script.
Mm-hmm.
I was a careful actor, but I suddenly had this moment of realizing, oh, when we previously shot the scene where she says, we're sorority sisters.
Right.
Dave knew that was a lie.
Right.
And I kind of realized, oh, wait a minute. Did I play it like I knew it was a lie? Ultimately, it's fine.
It's but, totally fine. I mean, you're so cheery and optimistic.
Right, like, exactly. It was a moment of panic as I'm talking to the other actors, like, oh, so wait a minute. So I knew she was lying in that earlier scene, right? And Ted Danson goes, for the record, it played that way. And I think he was just being encouraging.
But, he is remarkable. Have you worked with Ted before?
I've never worked with Ted before. I didn't work with him, but we were in a movie together in Alaska, and I met him in the lobby of this weird hotel in Alaska.
Was Kristen in this movie?
Yes, Kristen was in it,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, they talked about this movie.
That's right.
That's where the two of them met.
I believe it, Big Miracle.
Very nice.
Yeah, the working title, Everybody Loves Whales. Why did they change the title from Everybody Loves Whales to Big Miracle?
Maybe they found out that whales weren't pulling.
Maybe that's right. But I introduced myself to him in the lobby of this hotel in Anchorage, Alaska, and told him what a huge fan I was of his. And then I reminded him of that on the set of this. And both conversations were equally kind of awkward. But.
Again, we learned that, you know, this is a little bit of a sad goodbye, at least for the moment. Michael is saying goodbye to his new buddy, architect code sharer, Dave, and he gives him some plans. I guess is it the plans for the Hooters?
I believe it is the Hooters.
That looks like it's real classy. It looks like a bank.
Yes, yes.
He's fixed some of your problems.
Modeled after Monticello.
But he's left out one important element.
Bathrooms. There's no bathrooms in there. Yep. Oops.
That's a thing that he doesn't use. He also, I think it's the second time we hear him refer to defecation as shooting one out.
Yeah.
Like, I'm gonna shoot one out. And then he totally bails in like what is straight up cartoon. He's like, Eleanor, I'll be in the car. Like, he gets uncomfortable at his lack of knowledge of like, obviously I use bathrooms. He's super duper lying. And he bails. Eleanor achieves a double happy ending because she's sweet to Patricia, your 9-year-old mm-hmm. daughter. So maybe she's helped not only her mother and affirmed her in her happiness in her new suburban life, but she's told this little girl that people care about you and you've got a lot going for you. And good luck on the SATs or whatever.
Yeah, right.
So funny and dumb. And of course, this show it's impossible for the writers not to leave us with giant grenades with the pins pulled. Right at the very end of this, Michael realizes that, oops, he hasn't told Eleanor quite everything and reveals that, one episode, one of the reboots that Eleanor and Chidi not only were soulmates and lovers, but said to one another, I love you, which is news to Eleanor and is a big, fat, shocking thing. And then to get out of that one as a bail to that one, Michael says, do you want to listen to a podcast?
Yeah.
Do you want to listen to a podcast, maybe? Which, yes, I do. Promotional consideration is furnished by the following totally real advertiser.
Are you bummed it's going to be another year before the Jacksonville Sex Doll Convention is back in town? Do you love to dance with your friends for the potential to win small amounts of prize money or coupons for off-brand cigarettes? Then grab your friends and come on down to the Jacksonville Swamp Stomp Dance Competition next Saturday at the Carmen Electra Auditorium at the Smith & Wesson Performing Arts Center and ATV Repair Shop. Hosted by legendary DJ Gatorbait and featuring headliner dance crews like Panther Blood, Sucker Punch Drunk, Vuvuzela's Revenge, Dance Sherpas, Manatasers, Dance Dance Resolution, Orlando Sucks, Mercedes Benzos, 69 Ghetto Birds, Steve's Dance Army, and Get Jaxed. For the best in J-Town dance crews, come on down to the Swamp Stomp.
Has anybody yet discussed on this podcast Kristen Bell's umbrella rig? Has that been discussed?
Oh, it has been talked about.
It has been.
But I've never seen it.
You've never seen it yourself?
I would love your take. I've never seen it in person.
It's remarkable. So the first day that I showed up on the set, we're in the driveway. I think we actually were shooting the goodbye scene.
Okay.
This was the first scene that I shot. And so we're outside. We're blocking it outside. She has an umbrella over her head. and is holding in both of her hands a cup of coffee and the script.
Andy, what you're describing is impossible.
It's impossible. How could it be done? There's an umbrella. Is somebody holding an umbrella over her head? Right. No.
But there's no other person there.
No. She's got a backpack with an umbrella sticking out of the back of it. And it's not like wobbly, weird, like it's
not a makeshift.
No. And it's a small backpack that is possibly designed to hold like is like a camel bag to hold a bottle of water.
Sure.
Like it's a very small backpack, which would be the perfect choice if all you wanted to do is to hold an umbrella for you.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's walking around with a hands-free umbrella backpack.
Yeah.
And of course, because I hate the sun. The sun's my enemy.
Oh, hello, brother.
Yeah. And so I'm like, where'd you get that? She says, I made it.
Oh, my
really?
God.
She invented it.
She's going to be on Shark Tank.
And I was astounded.
We've heard it described. Yeah. I'm going to have to find a photograph and tweet it or something.
The idea of somebody who's not an inventor,
right.
Just a person who does something for a living and also invents something. It's like when you go to Monticello, Thomas Jefferson has invented a certain kind of desk chair or something like that.
Okay.
He just did it on the side. Yeah, I've got some free time. I'll invent a thing or two.
Right.
It's not his main thing. Anyway.
Where are those guys these days?
Thomas Jefferson?
Yeah. Elon Musk. thought I meant where is the corpse of Thomas Jefferson?
No, I thought you didn't realize he had passed away. I didn't want to break that news.
I'm not a giant history buff.
Sorry to break it to you, but...
I see in the production notes something about the MGM Grand Luxury Resort and Casino Elementary School.
Yes.
I missed that. Where was that?
It's behind her at the PTA meeting when she's giving her speech.
And
I love that sign.
Oh, what else does that sign say?
Always bet on Reed.
Right.
Always bet on Reed. With the cartoon MGM Lion. Yeah, I'm actually shocked that we were able to get away with that. But it was two submissions, and they were like, yeah, it's different enough. It's silly enough. It's fine.
What does two submissions mean?
Well, the first pass, the font was perhaps a little too similar on the MGM. It looked a little too much like the real one.
Okay.
And so they were like, can we push this a little bit further back? And so just change the font slightly.
But kept the name of an actual going global casino concern.
Yes.
Okay.
The name used to be a lot longer. It was, maybe I shouldn't say it because it didn't clear.
No, say it.
But it was like Steve Wynn presents the MGM, blah, 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 blah. And that one I'm pretty sure didn't clear. But yeah, I love that. That sign just turned out great. And it was one of those things where the instant you see the name, you're like, oh, well, I know what this should be. And it just, that one came right together. That was a... You know, I think I had said, oh, I'll have half a day to work on this sign. And then when it came down, it was like an hour maybe.
So how big was that sign?
That was probably about 8 feet wide.
8 feet wide.
Yeah.
So it's in the script is something like that even indicated in the script?
Something like that, because it's not a line of dialogue. They may say that previous long title may have been in the script. And so you might say, oh, they need a sign. But truthfully, on this show, there are times where they will call out where we are with some ridiculous name, but we know based on location or something else that it's never going to be seen, so we never make a sign. And that ridiculous name just stays in the script for nobody to ever see. But in this case, they knew they wanted a sign because they had that big space behind her to fill.
So what's the turnaround time of something like that? You know that you need an 8-foot sign. You go through a couple of iterations. What's the time front to back from when it gets approved, how it gets printed and delivered to set?
I mean, the approval process is the longest process because sometimes things will bounce back and forth for days until they kind of lock in, okay, this is what we want. Or the script might change and you're just about to send it off to the sign shop and then they totally change the idea of what they want that sign to be. So that happens sometimes. A sign like that had dimensional letters. So each letter had to be cut out and the lion's head had to be cut out. So that takes a little while longer.
What does that mean?
They're raised.
They're raised.
So it's not just a flat image. If we were just going to do a flat image, sign shop here could probably crank that out in maybe half an hour.
The sign shop on the Universal lot.
Depending on what, you know, their queue looked like, how many other projects they had.
Is it, when you go to the sign shop to give them stuff or pick stuff up, like this has to be a different show for them than a typical show, than Superstore or...
You get a lot of... phone calls with, hey, this is so funny.
Oh, good.
And you're like, oh, that's great. And they're like, you're still going to have to wait for it. And you're like, okay. Oh, okay, well, that's fine. But it's nice to get the calls that they appreciate the signs. But yeah, so a sign like that, I think we got it the next day.
Oh, wow.
But that's Universal. Universal is super fast, and we're here shooting on this lot, so that makes it easier. We don't have to worry about delivery or picking up or anything like that.
Wow.
And they're just a super fast sign shop.
Graham, what's good?
I'm going to say voting is good.
I like it.
I think there's an election coming up, so everybody can feel good.
Yeah. Rebecca, what's good?
I think the fact I'm going to get my gold statue is good. sorry, that's horribly, it's horribly vain. What's good? What's good is sponsoring a child is good.
How do you mean?
I sponsor a child through a charity called Action Aid. And they basically, I sponsor a child's education in India. I actually pay her family so they allow her to go to work because legally she's not allowed to go to work because she's sort of a lower caste.
Okay.
And yeah, that affords her an education. And when she's 16, she'll graduate and she'll be able to get a job.
That's really very lovely. I like that it's a specific child and that you probably know the name of and can correspond with, maybe.
Yes, and you can write and they write to you and you get pictures and yeah, it's very cute.
Andy, what's good?
Well, much less noble than child sponsorship or voting. I have a puppy. I have a 10-month-old puppy and that's very good because...
What flavor kind? Puppy?
Oh, a golden retriever of all things. And so there'll be times when I'm just sort of mired in the news on my phone and she'll grab one of her toys and just press it into my butt and it's... Meaning, grab this and throw it. Let's do this.
You read the news on all fours? I don't understand.
She's that size. No, this problem is, what she wants to do is pick up a toy and bring it to me and just shove it at me. But that happens at butt height. That's the issue. I am standing up when I'm reading the news, to be perfectly clear.
Aren't they the best?
What is her name?
Sunny. Sunny Sunshine.
Oh.
Super sweet.
Brought her in.
I should have brought her here today.
Oh, yeah.
She would have what? I'm just.
Is it too late?
Look around and see what she would have destroyed first. Cords.
Butts.
Yeah. Cords and butts. Oh, my goodness.
Mm-hmm. This has been The Good Place, the podcast. I'm Mark Evan Jackson. Thank you for listening. Now go do something good.
Janet, what have we learned today?
A good place was the place inside of us all along that was good.
Oh, Janet, have you been sneaking magnets again?
You've been sneaking magnets.
Oh, this podcast is available on Apple Podcasts and all major podcasting platforms or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hosted by Mark Evan Jackson.
Produced by Grant Rutter.
Written by Lizzie Pace.
That was Lizzie Pace. Mm. Music composed by David Schwartz.
Edited by Trey Booty. Booty? Booty.
Oh, Janet.